This week on the Inside Flap.
The femininity aspect of it and werewolves. Like, well, how come there's not more lady werewolf content? It seems like there is a lot of connection there. And so the book was born from that, from like laziness, basically, of being like, I can't believe I have to take care of this thing.
And he's standing by my trash can right by the door. He's like, he goes, is this the trash can that the kid threw up in? I'm like, yeah. So then he grabs the trash bag out of my trash can.
Evidence?
Lifts it up, starts walking out. I'm like, what is, for the love of all that is holy, what is going on? And he looks at me, he goes, oh, it's the one chip challenge. Like it's the most normal thing in the world. Turns around.
What a life.
Beats feet out of there. Meanwhile, I've got a trash can.
Wait, is he collecting
now.
Evidence?
I don't know.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the room to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the other side of Charlie the English Bulldog on the couch is Andrew Dowd.
Yabba dabba doo!
All right, welcome to...
Am I dating myself with that
one? No, I don't think so.
No,
I've got Fred Flintstone right here. He always lives on the soundboard right there. But I wasn't expecting...
Do kids know who that is, though?
I bet
they don't.
Yeah. I'll ask them tomorrow, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know any of those Hanna-Barbera creations have made
held
it
up
out of the 80s
yeah.
or 70s. Or held up.
The Jetsons, is that another one?
The Jetsons has the great theme song going for it.
Oh, does it?
Of course, the Flintstones has a great scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
The Flintstones has a great,
Flintstones.
That is.
But of course, Planes,
the Flintstones.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles already, what, like 30 years old?
It's got to be
That's
over
true.
30, yeah. It's a great movie, though.
Anyway, welcome to the show. This is episode 186 of The Inside Flap. We're joined again today by Rachel Harrison, author of Cackle and the Return, which was nominated for a Bram Stoker Award. Yeah. Which I hope her new book gets a nomination as well. It is certainly deserving.
I would not be surprised if it did.
So good. It is a werewolf book called Such Sharp Teeth, just in time for Halloween and all things spooky. And we'll have that conversation for you in just a second. But first, I got to tell you guys about something. Now listen. Hey, listen. Okay. When you're a teacher... There are a lot of factors you cannot control, and we'll just call them X factors. X factors you that are just outside of your control as a teacher in the classroom. And any of those X factors can really cause a major disturbance, especially when you have 40 kids in the room. It could be a kid who thinks he's the class clown and starts acting like a fool to get laughs and attention.
Audiobook of the week.
I'm wrong. Fat my fat. Look, this setup is just not. I can't.
Oh, that made Andrew and I both belly laugh. Are you talking about yourself?
I'm talking about this guy right here.
Dave there we go. Medicus.
Which was the button right above. I can't see my soundboard. But
we've blindfolded him tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, you've handcuffed me, blindfolded me. We're inside. It's getting a little too cold to be out in the snack shack. So now we're in the living room, and it's we need a little better.
Dave's fussy.
A little better setup. I got all the equipment over here.
That is
so
true.
Let's paint the visual of the equipment here. So Dave has his laptop in front of him.
My laptop is on my lap as it should be. Yes.
And to the right, he has the iPad
and a microphone
with 100 different sound buttons.
I've got all my sounds right over here on my iPad. Okay.
And to Dave's left.
Well, and then don't forget the microphone with the boom arm is coming right over top of the iPad, making it hard for me to see.
Well, you know what? I have a
my
little
labels on my
to the right. Tell them what's on the right, though.
Now, my left to my left, your right, yes,
is a mixing board.
It's the mixing board. Yeah.
All the sound comes into it. There must be like 30 dials, about 10 or 12 sliders and all kinds of things coming in and out of this. So Dave,
2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things plugged into it. Yeah. A couple
directly
from the back.
Adjacent to that,
perilously close. Some might say
12-year-old bulldog who is
Because we've learned we got to get him up on the couch because otherwise he runs around and he gets tangled in the cords, which are all sprawled over the.
He's not 12.
He's 10. Yeah. Anyway, we will make do. Listeners, feel free to send a nice table maybe we could use. I don't know.
I have an idea.
Oh, okay.
There's something.
If only one of us was an interior designer.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to bore listeners with it. But I have a table in the basement
All right. Anyway, so you got distractions like that. You could have two guys who dress in three-piece suits in eighth grade on their own self-created, quote, National Businessman's Day.
With briefcases.
And then proceed to slide those briefcases across the floor. As the two of us have done in the past, and we did drive one substitute teacher possibly away from teaching altogether, and Mrs. Stanton. And in the past couple of years at East, we've had a lot from the bomb scares last year to the fire alarms pulled this year, and obviously the active shooter police evacuation. And I was in class in New York City teaching in New York City, less than a mile away from the World Trade Towers when they went down. So listen, I've seen my share of distractions in the classroom. But all of those, child's play, I say child's play, compared to the I need to pull out some kind of, the major disruption that occurred in my classroom the other week. Now, let me ask you guys this. Have you guys ever heard of the one chip challenge?
No.
Andrew?
No.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about the one chip challenge.
Sounds familiar.
And if you Google it, I did a little research before the show, a quick 5-minute Google search. The first headline that popped up, schools are banning the one chip challenge.
Really?
So, yes. And I think you will understand why after I tell you about what happened in my classroom. So apparently this was created by the chip making company Paqui, P-A-Q-U-I. And it made its debut in 2016. And what it involves a bag in the shape of a coffin, I guess a small box in the shape of a coffin. And it contains a single chip laced with Carolina Reaper and Scorpion peppers.
No.
What?
Yes. And what it is, the company encourages you to eat this one chip, which will turn your tongue blue. And I've seen it in person.
Oh, no.
Will turn your tongue blue. And then you're supposed to just sit around and wait. You don't drink anything. And then, of course, you post your reactions, hashtag Paqui, onto your social media platforms.
No, so hang on. What about the peppers? Carolina Reaper.
Carolina Reaper.
I thought you said?
And Scorpion peppers.
I thought you said Carolina Reefer.
So let's
no, but you might need a little reefer.
So we're going to look up on the Carolina Reaper and the Scorpion pepper.
Right, the
let's
Scorpion
look up
paper.
The Scoville.
Yeah, let's look up the Scoville.
The Scoville
where they appear on the,
it's probably have, like in the scale. It's probably like in the millions.
Well, I'm in class the other day. I'm waiting for the bell to ring as Laura does a little research over there, and I see.
Oh,
yes,
it's the Carolina Reaper is the hottest chili pepper in the world.
And what is the Scoville number?
1.4 million to 2.2 million.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but it's awfully high. It's awfully high.
I'm looking for a comparison.
And what's a scorpion pepper? Does it say you have to see the scorpion on there?
That's, yeah, the scorpion's right underneath it at 1.2 to 2. A bell pepper is zero.
Zero.
And a pepperoncini, we all know those.
Oh, sure. Delicious.
That's 100 to 500.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Poblano, we know those out here. 1,000 to 1,500. Jalapeno, 2,500 to 8,000.
Okay, so a jalapeno pepper is that what again?
2,500 to 8,000, depending on
so 2 to 8,000. And then we jump up into the
like 2 million.
Millions.
Yeah.
So I feel like that could do physical bodily harm.
Absolutely.
Well, let me educate you.
Why
about
are kids
bodily
doing
harm.
This?
Because
it's hotter than the ghost. You guys have heard of the ghost.
Of course,
pepper.
I thought the ghost was.
Those
the
two
hottest.
are hotter than the ghost.
All right. So anyway, I'm in class, and there's a kid over in the corner, and I see him, and I see he's got this. He's holding. the biggest tortilla chip I've ever seen in my life. And from where I'm standing, which is at the front of the room, he's in the back, it looks black. And my classroom is set up like a horseshoe with all the, it's just individual chairs lined up all the way around the room. It looks like this big black chip. I think it's dark blue, like indigo, but it looks black. Hmm. And I see him, and he's breaking it up, and he's handing it to other kids.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, I'm like, huh, that's weird.
Yeah.
But then I just go about my business, getting ready for class. I don't think anything
else. It's a chip. He's a teenager.
It's a chip, but it's kind of weird that he's sharing it, this one single chip with other people, and it's kind of weird that it's black, and it's giant. So this happens, and I'm, you know, situating whatever. The bell rings, and then suddenly, as I'm just kind of just talking to the class, getting things set up, this other kid, starts. He's in the corner of the room. He starts moaning. He starts grabbing his stomach. He jumps up out of a chair. He races to the corner. He sticks his entire upper half into the trash can.
Oh, no.
And he starts making these retching noises.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Oh. And then all of a sudden, these three girls come running up to me, and they're like, I need to use the bathroom. We need to use the bathroom. I'm like, hold on. We're not supposed to let anybody out of the room in the first 10 minutes of class. We're not supposed to let more than one. I'm trying to say all this. Meanwhile, they just turn around. I can use this again. Yeah, that's the sound effect. Yeah. Of leaving, hightailing it out of the room. Other kids, I look around, are laughing. They're laughing hysterically. And I have no idea what is going on. Right? And then, and so I'm trying to get a handle on the situation. Two other kids get up. They just walk out of the room. They both look sick. Another kid is over standing by the trash can. Then, as I'm just trying to, like, ask kids what's going on, nobody's giving me any information. And I'm just, at this point, I'm just angry. And then all of a sudden, the school nurse walks into the room. I'm like, all right, what's going on here? Well, the nurse says, yeah, I'm looking for a kid's shoes and his backpack.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, this kid is going home. Where's his shoes and his backpack?
His shoes.
And I look over in the corner, and there is, yes, indeed. Why, wouldn't you know it, there's, I don't know if he jumped so fast he jumped out of his shoes. I don't really ever have kids taking their shoes off.
No, that seems like an unusual thing.
Why he's out of his shoes, but his shoes are in the corner and his backpack. So the nurse walks over. The nurse grabs the backpack and the shoes.
It's a male nurse.
Hmm. And as he's walking out of the room, the original kid comes back in the room like he's, now don't call it a comeback, but he's like the returning savior. All of a sudden, he looks fine. He grabs the backpack and shoes from the nurse. He's like, yeah, I'm good now. I'm good. Goes back down. The nurse just kind of shrugs, walks out of the room. And I'm like, I still don't know what's going on.
Happened.
And the kids are laughing. Their kids are going in and out. They're screaming at me for water. They're asking for my water. I'm like, what's going on? And then another minute goes by. Suddenly the dean comes into my room.
Oh,
and it's
no.
never, you never, the last time.
Oh, no.
The dean came into my room when I was doing a monologue and screaming. And he came running in thinking I was yelling at the kids.
So I'm used to a principal and assistant principal.
Oh, good question.
What is a dean?
This is the dean who sprinted and took out a homeless man with a Denver cop.
That's right, yeah.
He was meditating in the courtyard. Yes,
he's the same dean. He was also the one in our musical, tap dancing as the...
Listen, if anyone out there has seen Community, I picture him like that dean.
Sort of like the streaker in the Rams game that got tackled.
Yes,
they got tackled on the sidelines.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Anderson, Sean Anderson. Shout out to Sean
dean.
Anderson.
Dean, just call him Dean.
Dean. He comes in. Remember him from Something Rotten. He got up and tap danced.
I just all I picture is the dean from Community.
Yeah, let's go with that. We'll go with that. He comes in. He pops his head in my room. He's like, and he's standing by my trash can right by the door. He's like, he goes, is this the trash can that the kid threw up in? I'm like, yeah. So then he grabs the trash bag out of my trash can.
Evidence?
Lifts it up, starts walking out. I'm like, what is, for the love of all that is holy, what is going on? And he looks at me, he goes, oh, it's the one chip challenge. like it's the most normal thing in the world. Turns around.
What a life.
Beats feet out of there. Meanwhile, I've got a trash can.
Wait, is he collecting
now.
Evidence?
I don't know.
Oh, you still don't know.
I don't know because then that was literally the period before the police led evacuation.
Oh. Yes.
So I never got.
No,
I keep forgetting to get a resolution on this. I need to go back and find out exactly what happened. So then, then I have him left, and then another kid comes and he starts spitting into my trash can without a liner in it. I'm like, this is great. This is great. So there you go. If you're at home, you're looking for a little
that's
excitement.
That's entertainment right there.
Go find yourself these packy chips and indulge in the one chip challenge.
Ah, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it was terrible. As a teacher in the class, I never got the class back that period.
No.
They were
no.
done. That was no. it. It was over. Anyway, really Laura, how has your week been?
Oh, it's been a good week and a good weekend. We had a big marching band all day. Got home around midnight from marching band on Saturday. Sunday comes around. And, you know, you want to clean the house a little bit, do some laundry, that kind of thing, get ready for the work week.
Right.
And we had a smell in the home.
There
and
was
in particular.
You smelled it.
I think
it.
Women have a better sense of smell than men do.
Yes.
It was in the bathroom.
Right.
So I could not figure out where the smell
was
coming
from. A place where all fine smells come from.
I know, but it wasn't that. It was something else. But it was not a good smell. It's a bad smell.
Right.
And I thought, oh, I hope the drain's not backing up. I was afraid it was that.
Yeah, we've had sewage issues.
I looked underneath
as documented
the vanity,
on the program before.
Like to see if something got underneath the bathroom vanity because it's up on legs. Right. Like see if something was there. I didn't see that. I opened a window and I thought that would help. Walked away for a little bit. Came back in. Smell was still there.
Yes.
If not stronger than before, even with the window open. Oh. And it was a chilly day with some breeze going on.
A little breezy.
So then I thought, you know what? I'm going to clean the toilet. Maybe it's the toilet. Toilet looked clean already. I'm going to go ahead and clean it. So I'm emptying the trash can out. I'm getting ready. I'm grabbing the, you know, the toilet bowl cleaner.
Right.
And behind the toilet,
yes.
I see
yes.
a dead mouse.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm sitting on the couch out here trying to watch a little football and I hear,
I mean, Andrew, I screamed bloody murder.
It was a scream.
I screamed so loud. So, sorry, Nelson.
I'm laughing because the dog.
Dog jumped.
Yeah, the dog jumped out of his skin. Okay. He left his paws on the other side of the room.
Here's the thing, too. So both dogs came running to my aid.
Charlie did.
There's been a dead mouse in there for who knows how long.
And
they have great noses. Why wouldn't they have pointed at it to us?
And the cat?
Or grabbed it. We don't know. Maybe the cat killed it and pushed it behind the toilet.
So one of the great mysteries is animals, when it comes to dead creatures.
Yeah.
Like my dogs will go and roll around in a dead mouse.
That's true.
And I've researched this.
Yeah.
And they don't know why animals do it. They think it's because if they smell like a dead creature, right?
Another predator can't find them?
And that's it, that it basically throws their scent up. But they don't know why. But unfortunately, you know, animals, dogs especially, they don't look at carrion the same way we do.
Oh.
Yeah, and I remember we were on a walk with the dogs like a year ago.
It was a couple years ago.
They both did this to a bush. Again, I can use that sound effect. Straight into a bush. I'm straining at the leash. Almost knocks me over.
It was dark,
and we approached cautiously as to what is underneath this bush as both animals started rolling around.
And they started fighting over it.
They did. They're growling
Andrew,
at each other.
It was a dead cat.
A dead cat.
Yeah.
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 A dead, desiccated
cat. I screamed bloody murder then, too.
And you expected the dogs were going to alert you
I
to a
dead. I would have liked
mouse.
Like
please.
a pointing with the paw, you know, up and the nose pointed in that direction.
Now we speculate that the cat who's been going around
lifting the grates off the vents.
Yeah,
he finally got one.
That's our, and he's actually he hasn't lifted the grates anymore. I know if there's one, there's many.
If there's one,
but
there's more than one. And 'tis the season as it gets colder.
He hasn't.
The vermin.
He
try
has
to
not
come
grabbed
inside.
At the grates again.
Cats right. are such great hunters.
They yeah. are.
I mean, yeah. like you take dogs or whatever, but cats, yeah. I mean, whether they're little house cats or mm-hmm. whatever, man, they are hunters.
Little house cats.
Yeah, I mean, our cat, when he was a kitten, we'd just gotten him home from the little right. Angels with Paws rescue.
It might have been the same day or the very next day.
It was the next day, and he killed a mouse and laid it outside of Sylvia's room.
He did.
And it's like, you are paying, and he's never done it again.
He hasn't, except
for
until now.
Until now, we think.
But then we also have a guest over.
Oh, we did.
Who used the bathroom with the mouse there before we realized.
Was it Renata?
No.
Oh, we did have a guest. Mm-hmm. We did have a guest use the bathroom. Neither one of us knew there was a dead mouse behind the toilet. I have not told her.
So what's this cat? What's the name of this cat charity?
It's called Angels with Paws.
So at the beginning of COVID, my wife decided it would be a good idea for us to go and adopt a cat or two.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the Angel
Paws. Oh, did you go with Angels
with Paws? So we went down there. And basically, after spending like an hour in there, they pretty much kicked us out and said, you are not taking any of these cats.
Oh.
You know, three young kids and stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
You know,
two dogs.
As far as the cats. But they kicked us out there. But they told us.
How would it happen?
But they told us where we could find kittens. They're like, you guys really need kittens.
Oh. Well, we got ours as a kitten.
Yeah,
ours was a kitten.
Huh.
They kicked us out. What can I say?
I still think back to that day. There was a big orange cat called Big Boy.
Mm.
I kind of wish I'd taken Big Boy instead of Honey.
Big Boy. Well, we already had a big orange cat in Chep.
I know.
Cover your ears, Honey.
Cover your ears. He doesn't care.
Put those paws over those ears.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
So yeah, that's been my week. And but I was triumphant in finding the smell, the source of the odor.
And you found another one just before the podcast started.
We will not get into that.
No, we won't get into that.
Andrew, how have you been?
It's been, you know, it's busy, work and everything. So this weekend, we decide that we are going to rent out our mountain house. We got it all planned out. So Kitty and I, we go up there, and for three, four days, like I'm working nonstop to clean the place and get it ready to rent. Mm-hmm. You know, because for the last 3 years for COVID, we've taken everything we can up there, and it's kind of been like also a place to store stuff.
It's turned into a glorified storage facility. Yeah, and you got three boats out there. How many? What about the boats?
Well,
what do you do with the boats?
Chatfield.
Well, I winterized them. I reinforced the rack. I tied everything down. I put a tarp over the rack. So I've winterized, because we also had to winterize the place as well. So anyways, we get all that done. Now we're ready to rent the place. Okay.
Yes.
Now I will tell you that we went to a place called Devil's Thumb Ranch.
Oh, yeah. Really nice.
And my wife had heard about it.
Yeah. Very nice
and
place.
Most of the places there, you can't go there unless you're a guest at this like spa resort place.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have a restaurant called The Ranch where you can go and eat at The Ranch, right? You need reservations and all that. Now, it is one of the few places in the United States that can actually breed and I guess you would say raise Wagyu cattle. You know, for beef.
Oh.
And so
Dave and I are looking at you like you have three heads.
Yeah. And so
you had to add the for beef.
And now, Wagyu is a type of cow that originates from Japan. And these cows all have
DNA that's
traced back to Japan.
Hmm.
All right. And it has to. It's very highly regulated, all that. And so a lot of times, like we go to places like Nobu where we'll get Wagyu. You know, and you eat the stuff by like the ounce. Like this is nothing you order by the pound. You order it by the ounce.
Relatables with Andrew Dowse.
So we get the sampler.
Okay.
And it's 3 ounces of the New York Strip Wagyu.
Turn it down a little bit.
That's
Dave.
Capital Y-G-O-O.
How do you spell Wagyu?
W-A-G-Y-U.
A-G-Y-U.
And so 3 ounces of the Denver Wagyu.
Oh.
And 3 ounces of the filet Wagyu.
Oh, okay.
Now,
you gotta turn that down, Dave.
The filet was phenomenal, but the New York Strip was unbelievable. It had the Wagyu taste of like this Wagyu fat that just kind of melts in your mouth, but it also had the steak flavor too, like the combination of the two. It had the char of the steak, it had the Wagyu taste that sort of melts in your mouth. But the Denver cut, which was also like the most expensive on their menu, was even better than the New York Strip Wagyu.
Wow.
So just the best steak. And I've had some phenomenal steaks, but without a doubt, the best steak I've ever had.
Hmm.
My wife and I, we split like 9 ounces of steak between the two of us, so 4.5 ounces each. But this is Wagyu. I mean, so it is not, You know, so really a treat, but it's kind of nice, like in Colorado, you've got places like that. A ranch, you can go to the ranch, you see the cows. There was a fox, you know, playing in front of the window like 10 feet in front of us, right? Which was kind of cool. Mm.
And was that dessert?
No, it was not dessert.
Well, it sounded like everything.
But just unbelievable.
The ranch is for the consumption.
The Devil's Thumb is, they'll have like weddings and stuff there.
Oh. Yeah. It's just a gorgeous little valley.
Never heard of it.
It's really pricey. It's upscale. It's supposed to be beautiful. I've only heard good things about it.
Just outside Winter Park. And we were having fun watching all these couples and groups all dressed to the nines posing for pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely ridiculous, to be honest. You know, and then two women were wearing this exact same outfit.
Were they really?
They were. Katie's like, my God, that other woman's got the exact same outfit. Now they've seen each other.
That's happened to me before. There's only, I handled it, and I thought I handled it well, was I came up and I said, oh my God, I love your dress.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
And then it's fine. And she looks at me and says, thank you. And then she looks down and realizes we're wearing the same dress. And then she hugs me and we cry a little bit and then we take a selfie.
Yeah. Seriously?
Seriously.
Oh, wow. So that was the dinner. Oh, wow.
Without the crying.
At the Devil's Thumb. So the place is all ready to rent out. Now we come home, and let's just say there's a few discussions to be had. So let's say it is Tuesday. So 2 days later, now our place up in the mountains is listed for sale. Right? So now we've basically decided to put it on the market.
Wait a second. Hold on. We have a few discussions. How does it go from you renting it out, you spend 3 days fixing it all up, and then all of a sudden...
Hang on. I have another question. Did you have a mountain real estate agent, or do you have someone down here? How are you doing it?
The resort sells it for you. They basically do it all.
And do they have a key to come in and show
they've
people?
They've got all that, yeah. It's
it's in showing.
It's all turnkey, but, you know, we knew for the most part we can't use the place because the kids have got so much scheduled, we just can't get away to use the place anymore. So renting it out seems like a viable option, you know, but again, I mean, in a way we're, you know, and I'm still sort of looking forward to going up there occasionally, but I also know I'm kind of conflicted as well. So I'm, you know, it's just the way things go in my life is.
All right. So you're out there looking for a mountain retreat.
Changes.
What you want to give your realtor a shout out up in Killdozer country, Granby, Colorado.
Yeah. Well, beautiful Granby.
Look it up.
You know, that's my whirlwind life.
That is a whirlwind. And Andrew showed up tonight with like a pumpkin head character from a Halloween type of thing.
That's right.
Really
riding
awesome.
Riding shotgun.
So he was kind enough to hold it up in front of the house. And so you can just see Andrew's legs from under the pumpkin head. And then Sylvia and I pose in front of it. And then Sylvia and her boyfriend pose in front of it. So we got some really fun, cheesy photos. I sent some of the photos to Mary, your mom.
Yes.
And Mary, I didn't tell her, she said, oh, that's Andrew. And I said, yes, it is. And she says, I would recognize those legs. It's so weird.
What?
She's like, I would recognize those legs anywhere.
What the hell is she talking about?
She nailed Andrew's legs just from seeing
his legs. 30 years.
She's like, those are Andrew's legs.
Does your mom have a leg fetish, Dave?
She must. I don't know. I'm going to have to call her later.
I just wrote back Dim Gams.
It must be the hobbit-like legs, you know?
I don't know.
She didn't even see my hairy toes.
My mom, okay, I sent the same picture to my mom, and my mom said, oh, look what Dave's got.
What?
Yes. Oh, Mary Medicus, eyeballing people's legs, evidently. Andrew, better watch out. That?
Better watch out, Katie.
You know, it just goes to show you, like, different people have different perspectives.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of different perspectives, you're about to hear one from Rachel Harrison. We had a great chat with her all about our new werewolf book called Such Sharp Teeth. Laura, we both read this book, but you've prepared a little statement about it.
I did. So this is a hilarious at times, yet very compelling horror
novel.
Oh, it's
very funny, yes.
About a young woman who gets bitten in the woods and she turns into a werewolf. So this book is also about female body issues, feminine anger, and trauma. And it's also about, hey, I'm like kind of a werewolf now. So
what do I do?
What do I do?
Help me out, Google.
Let me Google this.
Yeah.
So this is just a funny and interesting and really unique take on the werewolf genre. Mm-hmm. I don't always read about women turning into werewolves.
You don't get a lot of women turning
into
werewolves.
Certainly don't find women Googling what to do if you turn into a werewolf.
Yep.
And for some reason, even though Google is in this book, it also felt a little 80s retro throwback.
It had a nice
in
throwback.
In a very good way
classic,
to me.
Classic werewolf, American Werewolf in London feel
it
to
it. It had a great vibe. It's a funny book, but there's also some deeper stuff to it, as most horror has, actually.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, such sharp
and
teeth.
And also the imagery of the silver blood. We got a lot of that.
Yeah,
with
that
the
was
silver
good.
Blood. And of course, the 7-Eleven hot dogs.
Absolutely.
Before we get into
can't
it
forget that.
With Rachel. So without further ado, here you go. Talking about her book, Such Sharp Teeth. This is Rachel Harrison. Nothing's fine, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. This is how I feel. I'm cold and I am shamed. Lying naked on the floor. What a fun book this was. We really loved your book, Rachel.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, it
absolutely
was so much fun.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we talking to you from?
So I live outside of Rochester, New York. So Western New York.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there.
That's right.
So it's really nice.
Yeah.
Me and my sister.
I love it up there.
Me and my sister used to live up there. What's the name of that amusement park up there that I love so much?
It's on the lake.
Seabreeze.
Yeah, Seabreeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Do you go there a lot?
I moved here during the pandemic, so I haven't been doing a lot of adventuring. now more so.
Yeah.
But before that, I lived in Brooklyn. So
okay.
Maybe next year
there
will be
go.
The year of the sea breeze.
I'm telling you, you should check it out. When we were there, of course, that was 10 years ago. But I mean, unless it's fallen into terrible disrepair, I'm sure it's a fine institution.
I think it's probably the same. It's probably one of those places where you go back and you're like, has time frozen here?
That's true. But anyway, like I was saying, Rachel, we love your book, Such Sharp Teeth. Now, this is a novel about werewolves, wet dog smell, and 7-Eleven hot dogs. What is it? I'm telling you, what isn't
that was
greater?
A great scene.
Yeah.
That was a really good scene.
That was hilarious.
I'm glad you appreciate the hot dogs.
Oh, yeah. I'll take them all.
I used to work in a 7-Eleven, and I would eat the hot dogs and feel incredibly sick. So it brought all those feelings.
There's like a specific taste to a 7-Eleven hot dog that's very special. And then it comes back to get you. Whatever it makes them taste so good is not good for you.
No. The revenge of the 7-Eleven hot dog. So, Rachel, what was it that inspired you? Was it late nights hanging out at the 7-Eleven that inspired you to write this book? What was it? Where did the inspiration come from for this one?
It came from being sick of being in my body. Just like, I always thought, like, oh, it'll get easier as you get older. You'll have less problems, but you have more problems. Like, there's just always something around the corner. And it's a lot to take care of your body. Like, why is it so hard to, like, supposed to, sometimes it's great. Sometimes you're like, yes, I love having a body. I love going running. I love tasting this hot dog. And then other times it's just like, I wish I was an amorphous blob that could just float through space and feel nothing. So I think it was feeling like at war with my body that kind of made me think about werewolves, and then kind of seeing the parallels between specifically, you know, the femininity aspect of it and werewolves. Like, well, how come there's not more lady werewolf content? It seems like there is a lot of connection there. And so the book was born from that, from like laziness, basically, of being like, I can't believe I have to take care of this thing.
No, I thought it was such a brilliant metaphor. I'd never heard that one before. Mm-hmm. And I also was like, I've read quite a few werewolf novels in my time, and I'm sure there's more in my future, but they're always male werewolves. Like, okay, maybe Twilight had a few female werewolves, but they weren't, you know, whatever.
It wasn't their story.
But, yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. It's the hot male werewolf. Always.
Yeah. The flannel and ripping off the shirt.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. The long flowing hair, the Fabio-esque
yes.
hair. You can have that. Yeah.
But you've got one sister, you know, whose body is betraying her by turning into this werewolf once a month, which is also a little bit of a feminine parallel.
Yeah.
And another sister, you know, whose body is also betraying itself in its own way with pregnancy, which is also a thing of its own kind, where, like, I know when I was pregnant, I didn't enjoy the act of being pregnant. I felt so out of control with what was going on. And each one carries its own helplessness and also like a little bit of shame about you can't control what's going on. I just thought it was such a brilliant metaphor. Did that just kind of hit you? Were you reading a werewolf book or were you just like, oh, it is kind of like that? I thought it was cool.
I think it was the idea of control that kind of really struck me, the lack of control. We have such a little control, little control over our bodies. And thinking about that idea and exploring femininity through werewolves, it just seemed like a good parallel. And especially, I think what I find most interesting about body horror is that whatever you are experiencing in your body, you're experiencing it alone. And there's that isolation. And so maybe, you know, two people have the same cult, but you experience that sick differently.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I thought, all right, these twin sisters are the closest you can be to existing in the same body.
Yes.
But they're having similar but different experiences where they're not in control. Mm-hmm. And the tension there of being like, I want to relate to you, but I can't. And,
yes,
you know, I wish you could understand what I'm going through, but you don't. And the tension there was really interesting to me.
It was. It was also, there's a lot of humor in the book, I should also say.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I really did love the scene when Rory just sits her sister down and she says very calmly, hey, okay, so I'm a werewolf.
By the way.
Don't freak out, but I'm a werewolf now.
Yeah, don't freak out, sure.
Learn how to deal with this. You know, and I've Googled a few things. So did you run through a few scenarios of like, how do you tell someone you're a werewolf? Like, was it always like, Rory's going to tell her like, hey, this happened.
I think it seemed more realistic for Rory to share it with Scarlett because they are so close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's such a big thing to keep to yourself. And she does sit on it for quite some time. After her first transformation, she kind of doesn't say anything until it gets to the point where she kind of has to. And I think anybody, well, at least for me,
sure,
if I have a big secret or something that's weighing on me, there gets a point where you're like, I know this is going to come out eventually. And you fight it, you fight it, you fight it, and then it just spills out. So I think that moment made sense for it to just spill out. And I did want to have Rory tell her sister because it seemed, in terms of the story in general, it seemed more grounded that she would than that she would keep it to herself the whole time. And then I also wanted to play with the doubt. And when you tell somebody so close to you and have that skepticism and have that more conflict between them. I think as a writer, you're always looking for as much conflict as you can squeeze out of any scenario.
For the reader, yes. I do this with books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
Sure. And I, you know, and then, so of course, when she finds out that she is a werewolf, she has to get online because that's what we do nowadays. No matter anything new, anything unexpected, we get online. I myself turn to YouTube for guidance. Apparently, some people are using TikTok instead of Google. Yes, believe it or not. it has become the search engine of choice. But Rory Googles, what should you do if you're bitten by a werewolf, which I slapped my knee at. Did you actually, and I did Google it, did you Google it? Did you get lost on any werewolf rabbit holes while you're researching? There's got to be so much fun stuff on the internet about werewolves. Do you lose yourself or are you able to get it under control?
I think there was like some fun ones and there's a lot of like matter of fact stuff, but she does mention, she's like, there's, it kind of devolves into like vampires versus werewolves and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think if you wanted, I think you can get fed up pretty quick on those sites because it's a lot of people arguing about like stuff that you're like, I didn't come here for this. I kind of just came to browse and see what's out there.
Right.
And sort of putting myself like when you, I think we've all done this where we have symptoms and you type it and you're like, I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to type it into Google and it comes up and it's like, you have some horrific illness and like, go to a doctor now. You kind of just close your laptop and are like, I'm going to pretend I didn't see that. And I think Rory's experiencing that too. I wanted it to kind of mirror that and be grounded in reality, even though it's such a supernatural, crazy thing. I wanted it to feel like, all right, if this really happened to me, what would I do? And that is what I would do. I think that's what most of us would do.
Yeah,
so.
Good. And it, there's no help out there is what she learns. Like right. There's, you know, like you said, there's just people fighting over Charlene Harris. And I forgot the woman who wrote Twilight's name.
Yeah.
Stephanie Meyer.
Yeah.
So like, that's all, that's what you're going to find. Yeah. That's
really fun. Yeah. Frankenstein versus the monsters versus werewolf. Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing about Rory too, is she's really angry. And I don't want to give anything away, but she's a right to be angry, I thought. And as she puts it, quote, she's not just mad, but filled with this ugly, consuming rage. And this is about something that happened to her as a teenager. Mm-hmm. And you note in the book, and I'm going to quote Taylor Swift here, notes this too, no one likes a mad woman. And our society really, really doesn't like angry women. Do you think we're getting any better with that? Because I don't know that we are.
I would like to think so, but I think it's such a tricky emotion, anger, because it's ugly and it's a lot and it makes other people uncomfortable. Any kind of anger. I mean, if you're like at Starbucks and the person in front of you gets frustrated, it's such a deeply uncomfortable thing to deal yeah. with somebody else's anger and to be around it. So I think it'll probably take a long time for yeah. just people to be okay with anger in general. And there's not, I think the issue is there's not a lot of avenues to express rage. And that's why people get mad at Starbucks, because whatever they're actually mad about, they don't know how to get that out. Mm. So, I think in general, as a society, confronting anger, we have to figure out how to do that in a healthy way, because mm-hmm. it manifests in really ugly ways.
It can. And I do think that when men get angry, even Governor Abbott, just different people who get angry, the crowd responds in a certain way towards an angry man mm-hmm. Of like, yeah, we should be angry. Yeah. And then, you know, Warren and you know,
always shrill. Yeah.
Well, it's whiny. They're irrational. And it's just too different. And they're angry as well. And they have a right to be angry too. It's just, it's frustrating, I think, to see as a woman. Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely, the double standard definitely exists. Yeah. And is it better? Probably not. I'd like to think we're moving in a good direction, just acknowledging the fact that it's not the same.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take a long time, because first we need to like confront anger, and then we need to confront the double standard. They're the two separate issues that, you know, everything with everything else going on in the world, it's like we don't even know how to confront anything. There's always a new crisis. So how do we get to these like fundamental human issues?
Exactly.
Of what it is to exist, when like it's like, oh well, the climate is a problem, and are we going to yeah. deal with that, or are we going to deal with like yeah. war, or like what are we yes. going to deal with today?
Exactly, baby formula, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, all of
there's
that.
Yeah,
there's a lot to worry about. Do you think we need more rage rooms?
Yeah, what and about
is
the
there
rage
such a thing as a rage room? So
there is. Yeah, oh, it's a thing.
I had no yeah. idea. Have you been one?
I haven't. There was one actually in downtown Rochester that I would walk by all the time during the pandemic. But yeah, there are things. I think I would, I don't know how I would do in one. Cause I feel like I'm still too like, can I break this? Like, I don't know if I could, I'd have to be in the right
yes.
headspace. Mm-hmm. Like yep. you have to be in the right headspace, I think. I most of the time it would take me something to tap into the whatever anger I have suppressed. but yeah, maybe more rage rooms are the answer. Maybe that's the healthiest place that people need to get out all their anger, so they don't take it out on yeah. other people.
Yeah, it's really not a bad idea. I would not mind. I could deal with one today.
Yeah.
That's true. I feel like I think it's the opposite though. People are going to go to these rage rooms. They're going to find out how much they love breaking stuff. And now they're going to walk around the streets and throw rocks at windows. You know, people could become addicted to breaking stuff. It's a satisfying thing when I'll throw a bottle into a dumpster Not like I'm doing it every day, but you know, if I do, I will do it with such force so I can. I want to hear the glass break. You know what I mean? Recycle. Yeah, everybody should recycle, though.
Yeah. Speaking of climate change. Yeah, I don't know. It's the kind of, it's like the purge concept.
That's true.
Yeah, those horror movies where it's like, you get it all out in one night. We don't know. I don't know if that works or not. I hope we don't try it, but.
Now, someone else who gets angry in this book is the poor dog Reaper. Now, I felt so sorry for the dog.
Yeah, I felt sorry for him too.
This was great, though. I never really thought about, a werewolf having a dog in the house and how the dog would react to the werewolf. Of course, Reaper picks up on the fact that, Rory, there's something to miss here, and the dog doesn't like it, starts, you know, attacking Rory, and Rory's like, yeah, go ahead. Here's the arm. Have at it for a while. Just hilarious. I hadn't really thought about that, but that is what a dog would do, is it not?
Yeah, and yeah. I based Reaper off, my uncle had a Jack Russell Terrier that was just relentless, and so I was thinking about like what kind of dog would be the most, because like some dogs are more chill, and so I wanted a breed that would be like, I'm going to bark at you all the time.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Very, like, not make my issues known. And I like a fun pet in a book.
I do too. And I like it. We love terriers also.
Yeah, we had a terrier. Yeah. And then once they get a hold of something, they're not forgetting about it or letting it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any favorite werewolf books or movies that you kind of dug into a little bit?
So Ginger Snaps is probably my favorite werewolf movie. That's like a teen girl werewolf movie. Yeah, it's great. That was a big inspiration for me. And then the transformation scene in An American Werewolf in London is the greatest transformation scene on film. Just the practical effects and the acting and... So that scene I watched over and over again. That was a big inspiration for the transformation in the book.
Yeah. And I love the way you described it. And I wrote that down. I said, this reminds me of, so you must have described it to a T. But it's amazing to me how those old school Rick Baker effects are better than the computer animated generated, you know, it's the practical effects. Like you said, those were growing up, your jaw would hit the ground. They're Michael Jackson Thriller videos. It'd be like, these are amazing effects, and they've gotten away from that, and it's gotten worse.
I agree. Yeah. So if there's ever an adaptation of Such Sharp Teeth, I want the practical effects.
Get Rick Baker.
Well, actually, yeah. I'm saying, like, I wouldn't care. I'd be like, do whatever you want.
Take it.
Please. Let's face it. Yeah.
Go full cheese. I don't care.
Oh, that's really funny. I love the cover of this book. It's so striking. And I left it in the house, but I was just walking by, and it's so visually grabbing. There's a subtitle on the book, which I thought was wonderful. It's called A Werewolf Novel, as if you don't get it, you know, with the cover. Did you think of the title, Such Sharp Teeth? Where did that come from? Or I know where it came from, but whose idea?
So it's funny because the cover got changed, and then the title got changed. So I think the original title was like the one that I always have like working titles. The working title was Meet Me in the Moonlight, which
that's a good one.
Might be too romancy, they thought. Well, so then I come up with a big brainstorm list, and then I send it, and then we pick our favorite. So that's how Such Sharp Teeth came about. And then the cover originally didn't have a werewolf on it. It was just fur. So a werewolf novel was a way to convey that it's a werewolf book, to know what you're picking up. But I do love this new cover. And I think the way that the font is stylized feels very like old school Creature Feature, which I'm all about. So that's how it kind of all came together. And now I think the title and the cover are just very well suited to the content of the book, which is all you can hope for.
Yeah. It's a grabber. Like, you walk by that in the store, you are picking that book up.
I hope so. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
I know, right? We're right ahead of Halloween.
That's right.
Too.
I mean, a great time. Yeah, this is what we need right now, going into Halloween. And there's a great title reference in the book.
Yes.
It was just great. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's always great when you see the title referenced, you know, in that manner. It's like, oh, there it is.
There it is. Yeah.
We're all kind of waiting for it too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, it'll be here somewhere. Yeah.
Now, Roy had a lot of trouble finding a safe space to go to. You know, you got, if you're turning into a werewolf when it's a full moon, for goodness sakes, you got to make sure you're someplace safe. And she's trying to figure out where to go and nothing's working. But if you, Rachel Harrison, your next full moon, you're turning into a werewolf, where's your safe space? What are you doing? Where are you going? Have you thought about it? You got a bunker? What's going on?
Well, interestingly enough, I wrote the vault scene. So Ian lives, the romantic interest lives in an old bank and there's a vault in the basement.
Yeah.
So I wrote that. And then in Rochester, there's a gym called Vault.
Oh.
And once the pandemic got more under control and we were all vaccinated, mm-hmm. I went to the gym and there is a vault in the gym.
Wow, really?
So, and I used to live right next to it. That's like my apartment was literally next door. So I would probably go to the vault. Now I live kind of in the middle of nowhere. So maybe I would be fine just going into the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
But there is a vault that I know of. That's not too far, so maybe I'd lock myself there. It's such a wonderful gym and wonderful space. So I would have to make sure I don't damage anything in my wolfiness. But it's got like the thick door and everything.
Wow!
So
that's awesome.
Is that like one of the workouts? I could see that like being one of the workouts. You got to open and close the
door. What do they do in there with the gym? How do they have it styled or situated?
So, like, the vault is one room, and then there's like a boxing studio. So if you have to get out some of your werewolf rage, you can do it there.
Oh.
And then there's a spin studio, and then there's like a yoga and strength studio. Okay. So it's very nice. If you're in the Rochester area, check it out.
Sounds hip, man. They've got their
very,
it's hip, and I
it's
didn't
so
realize
hip. It's underground, and they have like cool lights and stuff. So I would go to the very nice gym.
Of course, you got to dress like Mr. Monopoly to go in there. They won't let you go in unless you got the white mustache and, you know. The
no, I would, have my like matching set and like, I don't know, some werewolf accessories. The handcuffs.
The handcuffs for sure.
Yeah. That's really funny. There's also a lot of like vaping and cigarette smoking in this book that felt retro to me. Are you or were you a smoker?
Yeah, in college.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
I can't. Yeah. Sorry, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Socially in college. But yeah, I still think I of all the vices that there is, that's the only one that I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But
she's winning, Mom. I'm just kidding.
What's that smoke coming from?
That's the only thing that I like. You know, I'm not a big drinker or whatever, but that. I like
that's the one.
It's the worst.
I couldn't do it now because it like this now this once you stop mm-hmm. for a certain amount of time, the smell makes you sick. But I think I'm a fidgeter and I need to like be doing things with my hands at all times, and so that's kind of what I miss.
Yeah.
About it. And yeah.
Me so. Too. I was a smoker as well, and then I started running. But it's just that the habit, and then you get to take a break. If you're working on a job, you get to walk outside for 5 to 7 minutes. Like later, smoke break.
You know. If you're in a social situation you don't want to be in, just like, oh, I gotta have
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just something to do,
and it's social too.
You get to. It's the only time where you get to breathe deeply. You know what I mean? And then when you stop smoking, you're not walking around breathing in deeply, but there's something calming and relaxing beyond just the nicotine. But it's just the motion of,
yeah,
nice deep breath.
Thanks, Dave.
Now I'm gonna go buy a pack of Marlboro Lights on the way home.
We're all falling off the wagon.
Yeah.
Do you have any interesting writing? Do you have any writing quirks or habits that you have to have set in place when you sit down to write?
I like it very quiet, and I also like talk to myself. Like if I'm doing a read through, but I'll do it in like a hushed voice, so I'll just be whispering. But I feel bad because I think like my husband will be like, "What's that? Are you talking? Are you talking?" And I'll be like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm just talking to myself, like, just in the corner talking. But I need it to be like very quiet. I don't do well with distractions. So like I couldn't write in the coffee shop or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of my, I wish I could be chill and write wherever, but I'm very like, everybody be quiet and I'm going to talk to myself.
I love that. Yeah, I'm a big talker to myselfer, and to the point where I will forget that other people are in the home, and I'll be
talking.
This
is true. This is true. Yeah. What?
Can't verify.
Nope. Just talking to myself.
It's a little comforting. I actually find it to be comforting.
Yeah. I talk to myself outside of writing too, or I'll just be like, "Did I do that?
No,
yes. Not really." Stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll give myself pep talks too. I've been known to do that as well.
You got to hear it. Sometimes you have to hear it out loud.
Hear it. That's true.
All right, Rachel, it's now time for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
The last show I watched was House of the Dragon. Mm-hmm. And I'm super into it.
It's
the
new
Game of Thrones prequel series, right. And I really like it.
Awesome. I've been scared to watch it because everyone talks about the first birth scene. So I've been like,
there's three really intense birth scenes. I said to my husband last episode, I was like, what are they trying to do here? Because there was two in that episode alone.
What?
But there's been three in the whole series. And it's
a lot of
not pleasant, but they're not long. It's not like a real and like,
yeah.
10, it's like 2 minutes and it's over. So
I get traumatized by those. Those are traumatic.
Yeah. But there's also like, it's a little bit because there's like also dragons. Feels like there's some space between it because it's a fantasy show.
Yes.
So it's not pleasant, but you're also like, oh, like there's a dragon, just burn that dude. So it's kind of,
so that's cool.
There's that balance.
I understand. You know? I get that. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Ooh. That's a good one. Fictional place or world.
It can be a movie world too. It doesn't have to be book.
Mm-hmm. And we'll let you back in. So if, you know, something goes wrong,
it doesn't go well. I'm like thinking a lot of fantasy stuff, but stuff always is bad for people there. Like I wouldn't want to go to Westeros.
I know,
because of all the childbirth and dragons.
I see it though.
I'm trying to think. Maybe like, however, New York City in any rom-com.
Oh yeah.
Or like New York City in like a 90s sitcom where they're like,
yeah,
I work at a coffee shop and look at my apartment. You know, Upper East Side apartment. That's the kind of world I want to live in, where I'm just like,
oh god,
I'm a quirky girl who works part-time at a cafe and look at my beautiful loft.
Yes, and I'm hilarious.
So carefree. Yeah. My great fashion. I have a new outfit every week. That's the fictional world I'd want to go into.
Oh god, especially in the fall, because we've got You've Got Mail with the Meg Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before.
I want to be in Meg Ryan world. That's where I want to go.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I love that.
How about this, Rachel? Give us one of your top five favorite movies of all time.
When Harry Met Sally, off the top of my head, right. Just while we're talking
Speaking
about Ryan.
Nora Ephron, absolutely. Good answer. Right. Yeah.
How about a top five favorite book?
I just read The Pallbearers Club by Paul Tremblay over the summer, and that's become one of my top five favorites. I am obsessed with that book. I love it so much.
Great. It's on my list. I haven't read it yet. It's on my list.
It's so... I knew I would like it because I like all of his books, but like it just, you know, when a book like gets you in the soul, that's how I felt about that book.
Awesome. Yeah. How about this, Rachel? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
I haven't done it in a long time, but maybe Torn by Natalie Imbruglia.
Oh, fun.
All right.
Wow.
That's a classic.
It is a classic.
Good one.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
So I am about to start, I think it's called The Thing Between Us or This Thing Between Us by Gus Moreno. I'm very excited to start this book. I've heard amazing things, and like this afternoon I'm cracking it open.
Hey.
So it comes so highly recommended, I feel safe recommending it even though I haven't read it yet. But I'm just champing at the bit to get to it.
Awesome.
All right, Neri, very nice. Well, speaking of champing at the bit, we loved your book, Such Sharp Teeth.
It was a wild combo, too, because it was funny. And there was love story, and it was also like, oh my God, what is happening? Like some horror. Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to, I mean, the world's very so heavy. Easy. I wanted something not, even though it's horror, to not be, you know, too heavy. I wanted it to be fun and feel like a popcorn book. So
yeah.
Thank you for reading it. I appreciate it.
And this, thank you
for having me.
Absolutely. And thanks for joining us. It's always great to chat with you.
All right. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye.
The Inside Flap. All right. Thanks so much to Rachel for joining us on the show once again. And check it out. That is Such Sharp Teeth.
Do we have the breaking news?
Breaking news. Did you sell it? Did you get an offer?
No.
Oh.
So.
You understand this podcast isn't going out live.
So,
right?
So my...
breaking news whenever it feels like breaking.
I know it's not going out live, today, but his house is up.
Today in
down. Oh my gosh. Fat thumbs.
Today in elementary school, my kids had the pleasure of a writing class by J. Scott Savage.
Mm-hmm.
And he's he writes children's books. He's written like 20 children's books.
Wow.
J. Scott Savage has also taught over 3,000 classes. I guess this is his thing, is he goes in and he teaches elementary school kids to write. Now,
that's really cool.
Now, he had a book signing at the Barnes & Noble. And so my kids were so excited to basically go and, I think the book is called The Lost Wonderland. I'm not sure the name of the series. I mean, for people like me, the on this bookmark here, the font is not quite large enough for people like me to read, but I guess it's not intended for me, but it's called
Older People.
The Lost Wonderland.
He means older people.
I think so.
Diaries, Secrets of the Looking Glass.
Oh, so this looks really good. I see it here.
So my kids went to the Barnes & Noble. They're all excited. So you got these elementary school kids inspired by this writer, inspired in this writing class, and they want to go and get his book at the Barnes & Noble.
That is awesome.
So they go there, and my wife texts me like while we're here, and she says, it is so crowded.
Wow.
And so then I just got a text and I asked her, so, how did it go? Because the kids were looking forward to getting a book signed from him, getting some of the swag.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, after like 90 minutes, we decided to leave.
Oh.
The kids are all in tears.
Oh.
Mary Kate is crying and they did not get to, see the author. They did not get a book.
This is not the ending I thought would happen.
Signed the author. So, all the great intentions. And I am sure, like, I got to give J. Scott Savage credit for all the work he's doing to inspire kids.
Jeffrey.
To write.
Hmm.
Yep, Jeffrey. And
take him to task.
But,
I would blame his publicist.
I
blame his publicist.
I'm sure they have a line and you just go and get it signed.
Was it
a book signing?
It was. I don't know if he was doing other things there, too.
Hmm.
But... in any case, place was probably to capacity. I mean, I bet you the scene there, I would like to have seen video.
Maybe they should have sold tickets like they do for some authors.
In terms of what happened there.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But, I hope my kids are not dissuaded, from following, fictionary figures like this,
Fictionary.
And participating in literary... events like this. Mm. I hope they're not dissuaded from all this, but my kids, my elementary school kids are traumatized in their home, so I will have to go home and console them. So
I did not picture you looked happy for some reason. You've got like a smile on your face.
Well, it's an interesting. I mean, it didn't turn out the way you expect, but you know what? Most good stories don't.
Okay, there you go. From the mouths of babes and Andrew Dowd. Most good stories don't. All right, here we go. Let's get to it. Time to open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be.
Laura, what do you have for us this week?
My book's called Glimmer of the Other by Heather G. Harris. So this book really surprised me by how much I liked it. This is urban fantasy. It's where you have fantasy, but it's set in in today's world, right. Modern world. Mm-hmm. It's really probably my absolute favorite fantasy genre. if you're going to break down the fantasy genres, urban fantasy
is my
favorite.
This is your go-to. Okay.
My absolute favorite. So I was kind of, okay, I'm going to say something bad about the book right now. The cover of this book isn't very good. So if you can look past the cover, just pretend you never saw it.
Right. Well, I've always been told not to judge a book by its cover. And yet I always do.
It's really cheesy. Don't be put off by that. Okay. It's good. The writing's good.
You read everything on your Kindle, so you're not looking at the cover anyway.
No, but when I went to look at it again for this review, I was like, oh, yeah.
It's the one with the bad cover.
That's what it looks like.
All right, I'm going to have to look at it.
And that's an interesting observation because the artwork, when it comes to a digital book, counts for nothing.
No. Yeah. I know it doesn't, but it also, like, when you see it on Amazon, you're like, oh, I don't know. You see it, Dave?
Not the greatest of covers.
Glimmer of the other.
Not the greatest.
So this is the first in a series. It stars a private investigator named Jinx.
Well, it looks like the sword is going right through the dog's head.
I know. There's a lot that's wrong with it.
There's a lot. Okay. We could break that down. Mm-hmm. We could spend all day. We don't have all day, but
so it's okay.
Listeners, you have to
look that
one up.
Let me get to the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ignore the cover.
Yes.
Private investigator named Jinx. She can tell if someone's lying to her. So she's got like a human lie detector.
She's a play poker.
Yeah, so when we first meet her, she kind of thinks it's just a weird trait that she has. She seems to be normal enough. She's a private investigator living in a normal world. She lives by herself in her family home. Her parents are dead. She's the only person in her family who's still alive. And she has a great big Great Dane named Gato, which she thinks is kind of funny.
Because a dog named Cat.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
So she gets hired to find a college student who's missing, and she finds herself teaming up with a very handsome police inspector, Inspector Stone. And she also discovers there's another realm that's right alongside the real world where magic exists.
Ah, yes.
And now magical creatures are everywhere. And just like in a lot of these urban fantasies, there's like a magical police force task force who deals with magical creatures.
Right.
I love this magical realm thing. I could think about this stuff all day long.
and there, you probably do.
There are some really cool rules and ways to access this other realm that the author sets up. I liked that a lot. People who look human in the real world, in this other realm, you can see them. They might be a dragon. They might be a vampire or a troll. All kinds of magical creatures. A lot of this author clearly like has a good foundation in mythology.
Right.
And I appreciated that too. She also discovers, so Jinx also discovers that her Great Dane is really a hellhound.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's magic.
Hence the glowing red eyes.
He's magic too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So this book sets up just a great cast of characters, really big cast of characters. And this writer does it so well too.
And would you say a plethora?
It's a plethora.
A plethora.
And it's an exciting world, too, for Jinx to operate in. I also appreciate that Jinx isn't given just one romantic interest.
Oh.
But two.
Two?
So, if you Charlaine Harris.
Sure, and who doesn't?
I think you're going to love this series. I've read the first two. I think there's four out so far. I had to stop myself from reading the third because we have a podcast.
Very good.
But I will read the third. I just got to wedge it in between the others.
Wedge it in there.
Yeah, okay. That's the hazard of the podcast.
It is.
I mean, you can't just, you know, read a series.
I just want to read the whole series right away.
That's right. No.
I couldn't stop myself also on Kindle. It makes it so easy because it's free in Kindle Unlimited. And it's like, do you want the next series? Click here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, let me just start it and see how it is. I'm sure it won't be as good because sometimes the second book in series... They're not. I like the first book.
These listeners are relying on them, on us, to bring them fresh content.
The second book is just as good as the first, if not more.
Wow!
And I'm very excited about the third book.
Mm. Well, and books never end with you wanting to read what's happening next.
I know.
That never happens.
Never, ever in series.
But remember,
especially urban fantasy series,
they never end well. All right. So that is Laura's book. My book.
Dave Medicus.
This is why we can't have.
This week, as we count the days down towards October 21st and Taylor Swift's new album, my book is called Hostage by Claire McIntosh. This is an intense white-knuckle thriller that takes place over the course of 20 hours during the first nonstop London to Sydney flight. Hmm. So Mina is a flight attendant, and she has managed to snag a coveted spot working on this first inaugural nonstop flight and all the media hype that surrounds it. And the guy who owns the airlines is on there. He's tweeting about it. He's trumping it up like this is going to be the next big thing, this nonstop flight, London to Sydney, 20 hours. But Amina is anxious to get away because she has recently separated from her policeman husband, Adam, and just wants to get away for Christmas. Now, meanwhile, Adam is home and is watching their 5-year-old daughter. Well, it turns out that Adam has some issues going on. He's some self-inflicted problems that I don't want to give any spoiler alerts away. But Adam, let's say, has done some bad things in the past. And before you know it, he is in a life or death situation along with his daughter, their 5-year-old daughter. Now, back on the flight, Mina mysteriously finds that her daughter's EpiPen is on board, although she's sure that she didn't bring it with her because she knows her daughter has a peanut allergy and needs it. And now why is it on this plane and who brought it here? And then suddenly a passenger on board the plane dies. And then basically on this plane, all hell breaks loose. A little hot. Wow. This is a gripping, taut, intense thrill ride that flies by. Besides going back and forth between Mina and Adam, there are also chapters from the points of view of all the different passengers, not all the different, but different passengers on the plane. And it's interesting to get their backstories as well as what they're going through during this tense situation. I love this book. If you're looking for a fast-paced thriller with action, intrigue, and perilous situations, check it out. This is Hostage by Claire McIntosh, and I've read a couple books by her now, and she is an excellent thriller writer, really knows how to create that tension and pull you through it. All right, Andrew
down.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ blow my speakers up tonight.
Blew my speakers up.
DJ blow my speakers up.
My book this week is a science fiction book, and I think you could call this hard sci-fi. Oh. But the author is Stephen Baxter.
Yes.
And Stephen Baxter writes some just phenomenal hard sci-fi books, just unbelievable. And this is another book, it's a standalone book as far as I know. And the book is called The Thousand Earths. And
good title.
That's a lot of Earths.
And let's say there's two storylines here that you know, you kind of wonder, like, are these storylines going to converge? And they do, in an epic way, on a scale which is just unbelievable. And so the story starts in 2145 AD when John Baxter, right? And the author's Stephen Baxter, so I don't know.
It would be weird that he would choose to use his own last name.
Yeah, John Baxter. So you wonder. And so John Baxter is a, he's a scientist, he's an explorer, and him and his wife basically, they couldn't have kids, and so they had a niece that they loved and they cared for, and the niece was Sarah, and so when they took niece on camping trips, and on one camping trip, Sarah walked a few feet from the campsite, and the ground beneath her gave way in some geological formation that had sat there for millions of years and decided to give way in just the second when Sarah was walking over it. And so, you know, John has not really gotten over this incident. They love Sarah, and it just changed things
for
him.
It swallowed her up?
Yeah, and so they ended up being separated. Yeah, she died. And so they ended up getting separated, and, you know, John's wife feels that...
Swallowed her up like a one big chip.
Yeah. And so John... Is
have you
now,
been like waiting to insert that into the podcast? Yeah.
No, it just came right off the top of my
man. I tell you,
tip off the old block.
Unbelievable. I mean, really, yeah. And so, so basically, John is getting ready to go on an epic voyage in 2145. He has built a ship called Perseus, and what's interesting is the technology in this book is not. It's not too far out of the realm of possibilities. Now, there's two key pieces of technology on this ship. The first piece of technology is that there is a stasis pod, And the stasis pod, basically, you know, John can go into stasis and sort of hibernate, you know, for months or so at a time. And then he's going to wake up, you know, get the blood circulating again, eat some food, and then he goes back in stasis again. The other technology is that this uses a, you know, I guess a type of a solar scoop that powers it. And it's been theorized, like this is actual theory, that they create like these solar scoops, these huge solar scoops that can basically take up, you know, dark energy and things like that and propel spaceships. Hmm. But, you know, it's actually been theorized, and they maybe even built things like this, maybe not to this scale. So the technology in this book is not too far beyond what we currently have. And so John is going to take a trip, and he's taking a trip out to a star system. And because he's going to be traveling close to the speed of light. Now, Dave and Laura, do you know what happens when you travel close to the speed of light?
Yes, everything slows down.
Time slows down. And so...
Did you hear me? I go,
Yeah. And so this trip out to the star system and back is going to take, you know, maybe John, I think 20 years or something like that. But for the rest of the world, for Earth...
That's right. It doesn't...
You've seen Interstellar.
Yeah, I've forgotten about this. I do know this.
5 million years will have passed.
Yeah.
And so he takes this trip and he comes back.
That's right. Interstellar.
And yes. 5 million years has passed. And, you know, and that's part of it is like... So part of his journey is he takes this trip and 5 million years passes. What happens in 5 million years? You know, when he comes back to Earth and are things as he left them... Hell no, they are not as he left them, right? It's all completely changed. And so that's one storyline is John Baxter. Hmm. And let's just say this may not be his last journey. You know, he's an adventurer, and that's what he's going to do. He's going to keep journeying.
Now, did he in this book, does he go back to Earth?
He does. Okay. In his first trip, he ends up going back to
Earth. So you get to see what it looks like. And is that like a cliffhanger, probably?
I wouldn't say it's a cliffhanger.
But
I
mean, it shows you what it looks like.
And I don't want to give...
Don't give it away. Too much. I'm just away. Curious.
And one of the threads of this book is the survival of the human race. And it's the human race trying to find ways to survive.
Oh, we're blowing up asteroids that could hit us now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, well, not blowing them up. We didn't blow it up.
Didn't we?
Come on.
What did we do?
So recently, come on,
Laura. I thought we blew it up.
We crashed a satellite into an asteroid that was going 15,000 miles an hour.
But it blew up.
No. The satellite did. They were just trying to see if they could nudge it out of its trajectory.
Oh, I thought it shattered into like 1,000 pieces.
The satellite did.
I thought the asteroid did, Andrew.
Was Bruce Willis on the satellite?
Unfortunately, no. Yeah. So.
Wait, that's too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon?
Yeah.
Well, I was just referencing his role in Armageddon.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, it's a valid reference. So the other storyline is there are twin sisters, Mel and Ish. And they also have a brother who is a complete schmuck. And schmuck is probably not a strong word. And they have parents. And they're being raised in this world. And Mel is describing looking up and seeing all these Earths, right? That she's not on, there's all these the Earths. And they're saying there's 1,000 Earths. Hmm. And so, you know, she's looking up and she sees something like she's looking up at stars. But they're not stars, they're other Earths.
Whoa.
And so they are on one Earth. And... You're kind of thinking like, what is this world that she lives in, you know, and how does this relate to Earth, you know, and that is one of the great mysteries of the book, which I'm not going to give away here, but that's the world they describe. Now you also find, and Mel and Ish are they're young. I don't know if they're like 14 years old or so when this happens, maybe younger, and so their brother, who's a schmuck, he wants to make his sister's lives as miserable as possible. I mean, he is mean. There is really probably not a decent bone in his entire body. And so if he can cause pain to his sister, she's going to. So one of the things he reveals to them is that basically our Earth is going to end in 30 years. And so the Earth is ending, and there is this tide of destruction that is slowly moving towards the center of the planet. And... You know, and the sisters want to think, well, this can't be real, but they realize, well, that's why we're calling this year 30. Like, they realize their calendar, it was year 31, and now it's year 30, is they're counting down to the end. You know, and so, and part of this is, it's their struggle to survive. And, you know, and you're trying to figure out, how do these stories relate, if they relate, you know, how does this all come together? And, you know, and the book is, it's two storylines. I mean, you really care about, you care about the characters. You wonder, like, how does this connect? I mean, and this is really such an absolute immense, like, the scale of this book is just unbelievable. And I won't give away, I won't give away more than that, but the book is The Thousand Earths by one of the sci-fi greats, Stephen Baxter.
Sounds really good.
Yes, it does. And that is recommended by
Andrew Dowd.
Which means it is time now for the audio book of the week. And my pick this week is called The Defense by Steve Kavanaugh. Steve Kavanaugh, narrated by Adam Sins. Sims. Oh, man, I'm having some. I am struggling to get through this one.
It's okay.
I am hanging in there.
We'll get there.
This is the first in the Eddie Flynn series by Steve Kavanaugh. Now, I have read one of the other ones before in the series and really enjoyed it, so I thought I'd go back to where it all began, and I'm glad I did. There's a fast, darkly funny legal thriller that introduces us to the character of Eddie Flynn, the sardonic, tough former con artist turned defense attorney. Now, Eddie is a guy who grew up on the streets. He learned how to be a con artist from his father. And he just wanted to walk away from the law after becoming a defense attorney. But unfortunately, just when he thought he was out, he's dragged back in by the head, no one other than the head of the Russian mafia in New York City, a man named Oleg Volchek. So this guy has not only strapped a bomb to Eddie's back to force him to defend Oleg, he has also seen to it that his 10-year-old daughter Amy has been kidnapped, and if Eddie cannot get Volchek off, then nothing good will come of his daughter as well as Eddie. So now Eddie has to figure out how to pull every trick he knows in order to win the case, and he only has 28 hours to do it, so the clock is ticking. I love the character of Eddie. He's funny. He's smart. He's got the street smarts as well as the courtroom skills. He has to think fast on his feet in order to do everything he can to win this case. Otherwise, he's really literally going to be blown up as he's wearing this bomb on his back the entire book, as well as his daughter being kidnapped.
Speaking of Bruce Willis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The book has it all. It's got
a younger Bruce Willis.
Right.
Yes. Courtroom drama. It's got action. The deeper into the trial we go, the more the twists come up involving the Russian mafia and how it's all linked back together. A great character in Eddie who's likable and easy to root for. A fun mystery that flies by and keeps you guessing all the way to the end. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Defense, the first in the Eddie Flynn series by Steve Kavanaugh.
Ted's Diner was my favorite place to think. I don't know how many trial strategies I had worked through in these booths, covering the tables with medical records, gunshot wound photos, and coffee-stained legal briefs. In the old days, I wouldn't have eaten breakfast at the same place every day. Way too risky. In my new life, I enjoyed the routine of breakfast at Ted's. I'd relaxed and stopped looking over my shoulder. Too bad. I could have used being on edge that morning. I might have seen him coming. Walking out of the diner into the heart of the city felt like stepping into a safe place. The sidewalk bustled with the Monday morning commute, and the pavement felt reassuring under my feet. This guy wasn't going to shoot me in New York City, on Chambers Street, at 8:15 in the morning, in front of 30 witnesses.
Audiobook of the week.
All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week, and that will do it for us. Thanks to Rachel Harrison for coming by. Really love that book, Such Sharp Teeth. Check it out. It is a lot of fun. That is episode 186 in the books. Till next time, my name is Dave Medicus. See you later.
Another perfect show.
We've done it again.
Wilma!
5-star review, if you feel like
it. Oh, yeah. Please feel free to
only
leave
if you think it's
5-star
only
reviews.
If you're doing the 5-star, though. Thanks.
There you go.
And we cry a little bit, and then we take a selfie.